Now I'd like to hand you over to Fiona Armstrong, who is a member of the ACCRA Executive. Fiona's going to tell you a little bit more about Tom, and then she's going to open up to the floor for a discussion about the presentation that Tom gave for us. Welcome, Fiona.
Good morning, everybody. I'd like to thank Louise for her welcome. Thank you to the Ngunnawal people as the traditional owners and custodians of this land. And also thank you to all of you who've been able to make it here so far. We're looking forward to being joined by a few more delegates, but we appreciate the effort that each of you has made to get here to continue our efforts for health reform and to further the debate on national health reform. Before we move to responding to Tom's presentation and generate some discussion, I'd like to just introduce you to a few more details of his biography in the absence of him attending. Tom Carmer was appointed Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner with the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission in July 2004. Tom, as you've heard this morning, he has also been appointed Acting Race Discrimination Commissioner. Tom is an Aboriginal elder from the Kungarakan tribal group and the Iwadija tribal group, and my apologies for those poor pronunciations, whose traditional lands are southwest of Darwin and on the Cobourg Peninsula in the Northern Territory. Tom has been involved in Indigenous affairs at a local, community, state and national and international level and worked in the public sector for over 30 years. He served three terms as a director of Aboriginal Hostels Limited and as a company director for a tourism and hospitality venture in the Northern Territory. Until his appointment as commissioner, Tom Carmer managed the community development and education branch at Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Services, ATSIS, where he worked with remote Indigenous communities to implement community-based and driven empowerment and participation programs. In 2003, he was Senior Advisor, Indigenous Affairs, to the Minister of Immigration, Multicultural and Indigenous Affairs. From 1995 to 2002, he worked as a Senior Australian Diplomat in India and Vietnam, representing Australia's interests in education and training. During his time in India, he also oversaw the management of the Australian International Education Offices in Pakistan, Nepal and Sri Lanka. He moved to Canberra in 1992 and undertook various assignments, including Executive Director to the Secretary and Senior Executive to the Department of Employment, Education, Training and Youth Affairs. In the early 1980s, Tom and Indigenous colleagues established the Aboriginal Task Force at Darwin Community College, which later became the Darwin Institute of Technology, which provided second chance education programs for Indigenous people. He became a senior lecturer and head of ATF for 6 years. Okay, so that's about Tom. Now represents an opportunity to further discuss the presentation made by Tom this morning, to further ACRA positions on our support and advocacy in Indigenous affairs. And I now invite members of the audience to take advantage of the roving mics that we have, Anne here on my right, and Paulina Gordon on my left are carrying microphones. So I'd encourage you to respond to Tom's presentation and also to offer your ideas about how we as ACRA and you as individual organisations can further that aim of Indigenous health equality within a generation.
I was actually going to say a word or two first as a sort of bridge, because I think there may be some awkwardness. I mean, Tom Carmer has eloquently brought to the room the biggest issue of all, and we've just met. I mean, we're a new community. It's 10:30 on a Monday morning, and suddenly we're confronted with the reality of what on earth do we do, where do we start with the status of Indigenous health in Australia. So I thought if I said a few things, it might help bridge the gap and reduce any shyness there is in the audience. The question is, I mean, we're not trying to prescribe how you respond to what Tom said, but clearly the purpose of these 2 days is to relate the challenge that Tom has reminded us of to what ACRA is doing. So, briefly, it is this. ACRA is concerned with, if you like, the high-level health reform issues, the big-ticket items, how governments relate to each other, how the health system is funded, how it is structured. So those are the sorts of key high-level themes that ACRA is dealing with. So I know that the reason why Indigenous health has been on the agenda of ACRA is because we all believe that one of the main benefits from an improved structure, system, relationships in the health system is that it will help whatever else we're doing on Indigenous health. So clearly Indigenous health is our largest problem, and we in ACRA believe that if we get the big ticket items right, if the relationship between governments is better, if the funding system can be improved, if the structure of the health system is better, then it can impact on all the other things we're doing for Indigenous health, which of course is our number one priority. That's the reason why there is in the books which you've seen in your folders, there's a book of existing position papers of ACRA, one of which is about Indigenous health. Now it's fairly generalized because of course ACRA brings together 43 organizations, but it's powerful in the sense that all 43 organizations believe what we've written there in that fundamental statement about Indigenous health. So that's in your books for you to look at whenever you may. But I thought, as I say, I'm not trying to prescribe the way the questions go, but I did want to avoid the first shy silence and to try to put what Tom has said into the context of what ACRA is trying to do. I hope that helps.
For those of you who haven't met Gordon Gregory from the National Rural Health Alliance. Questions, discussion to kick it off? Can I, at the back?
Surely we're better to say the Indigenous health issue is the same as the issue for all of us. One of the major ways we could make certain progress and improvement is for the government to make it easier to get more doctors out there where the health is a big issue. It's an issue here in Canberra. There are not enough doctors. On Friday, my ears were blocked and I tried to get an appointment to get the residue out of there, and I couldn't because I wasn't an existing customer for any of the doctors. My doctor, Dr. Jolly, went and died on me, so I had to look somewhere else. But surely it's an issue for all of us to encourage the federal Commonwealth government to fund more doctors for Indigenous and the community as a whole.
I'm sure you wouldn't find any disagreement that access and equity issues are at the heart of ACRA's advocacy, and certainly we agree that there are problems with access and equity to health services for all Australians, but you also can't argue with the appalling health statistics as Tom has outlined, and I think there requires a concerted effort to an investment to bring those to anywhere near the rest of the population, which is why they're receiving closer scrutiny and specific attention. But certainly there's greater attention and investment in improving access to equitable access to health services for all Australians. And as you'll hear from Tony McBride when he reports on some of the Health Issues Centre research later today, that access to health services is becoming increasingly difficult, as is the rising out-of-pocket costs causing difficulty in people accessing services.
I'm Fiona Cujo-Wheatland. One of the things that strikes me in this area is the complexity because of the relationship between healthcare services and health generally. And a lot of the things that Tom was talking about are things like housing and access to a whole range of services that aren't traditionally thought of as part of the health area. The same issue arises with the socioeconomic differential in health as well, that you're talking about something that's much more complex than just access to doctors primary health care services. And I'm wondering how we deal with that, because government's particularly bad, I think, at actually cutting across its own silos, and yet we in many cases are in a similar boat. It's quite difficult for us to actually impact on those things which might in fact make a real difference by being able to deal with housing and all of those other water, food, all those sewage, yes, all of the other issues of that kind.
Would anyone else like to comment on the socioeconomic relationships with healthcare? Sheila?
I was actually Sheila Lowe from SARA. Picking up on, again, on what Tom was talking about, the state being the Australian government, but the complexity, again, that a lot of services are provided by Australian government, but that the states do actually fund a range of health workforce and acute hospital services. And for ACRA to be really driving the resolution of jurisdictional divide, also recognising that healthcare is more than just access to doctors, that remote area nurses are the key focus of health service delivery in the very remote communities, and they are funded by state departments, not necessarily Commonwealth departments, and also in talking primary healthcare, the access to allied health services that are essential. So we can be talking about multidisciplinary team approach to health, not just medicine. And I've just lost my train of thought. But yes, for ACRA to really be pushing primary healthcare services at its broadest, so picking up on the social determinants of health, but really driving the need for any improvement for Indigenous health to remove the jurisdictional divide and abdication of responsibilities at both level. And also engaging with community, which is very difficult when you've got policy being created in Canberra, trying to be implemented at very small local regional levels where there is need for local solutions.
A comment I'd like to make is around the data, in that it's high level data that's been used to date, but just looking at the information in the briefing here in the paper received, with a quoting of 458,000 Aboriginal and Islanders and about a quarter live in discrete communities. So clearly there are some very major differences of the kind of communities they live in across Australia and their access and to regional hospitals and health services, but we're just using one data set to describe them thus far, some high level data. And coming from Victoria, I know there's different Aboriginal communities and towns that do have access, you know, within a few K to good services. And out of interest, I'd like to know how their data stacked up against national averages, etc. Because I think as we progress further, we'll need to look at more detailed data, particularly if you look at a, you know, 5, 10 or 20 year time frame around it all.
Sorry, can you just repeat what your question was around data?
Well, just to get a better understanding of data, because I don't think it's adequate just to use the 3, 4 or 5 takeaway themes for Aboriginal health, which are relevant at the high level, but as you try and get underneath of the local communities, and there's such difference around Australia, we just need to have some more homegrown data for communities that aren't, you know, as you see described on the news these days.
I think certainly there's an overwhelming understanding that there is a paucity of data around, and particularly in relation to health outcomes and the multiplicity of funding sources that we have and the variety of different types of data that are collected that don't necessarily talk to each other, make decisions that are data-driven very difficult. Does anybody have any other comments to make about research?
I'm Helen Benz. I'm representing the National Council for Intellectual Disability. As far as data is concerned, we do have some very striking data, and I just wanted to point out, not to ask a question, that there is such a similarity between the problems, the health problems of people with intellectual disability and of the Indigenous population. The numbers are similar, about 2% of the population. The health life expectancy gap is greater. It's more like 20 years in people with intellectual disability. The number of health problems, the average health problems, 5 chronic health problems per person. We've got exceptionally good data about all of this. The same problems about access to health care and the need for coordination is absolutely pressing with our lot because, you know, trying to get primary health care is one thing, trying to get into hospital, trying to avoid premature death and to get decent care, which is not prejudiced in one way or another, is very similar. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
So what do you see as the key issues in terms of improving access for people with intellectual disability?
I think there needs to be cooperation between the Commonwealth and the state. We're just thrilled to get a new Medicare item which allows for yearly assessment of health care by general practitioners. You get a decent fee for doing that, about $200. That's great. But then they do also need to have access to dentists, to physios, to the whole lot of allied health care, which is not funded and very difficult to get. I think that's probably the next thing that we need to go for. And we do certainly need to have some recognition in hospitals that specialised health access is needed there.
Barb's been waiting for a bit. Do you want to go ahead, Barb? Got a microphone?
Barb Burnham from the Australian College of Midwives. I was inspired by Tom's focus on two key points. One is not reinventing the wheel, and secondly is concentrating on solutions rather than just problems. And in the area that I work in, there is a strong focus within the college on trying to work with other organisations to improve the perinatal outcomes for Aboriginal mothers and babies. And I think one of the important things that we have to bear in mind is that there are solutions available that we can perhaps gain a great deal from when we look even as close as New Zealand, but also in other countries. In New Zealand in the last 15 years, the perinatal outcomes for Māori mothers and babies is now actually slightly better than the non-Māori population in New Zealand. And there have been a number of elements to the policies that have been used by the New Zealand government. One of the key ones has been educating Māori midwives who provide care to women in their own communities and also having a much more seamless interaction between primary care in the community and hospital-based care for those mothers and babies, so it's much more culturally appropriate to those women's needs. I think there's a great deal we can learn in Australia from lessons like New Zealand and Canada, where a similar experience has occurred for the Inuit peoples in remote areas of northern Canada. So I just wanted to flag that focus that Tom's given us on let's look at solutions rather than just problems, and I think that's one of the things that ACRA can be doing is identifying tangible examples of solutions that are available. There's even some very good work going on within Australia in the moment in this area where GPs, midwives and Aboriginal health workers in pockets of northern Queensland and northern New South Wales are achieving fantastic outcomes, substantial improvements in outcomes for Aboriginal mothers and babies, and yet the resources to support those programs are absolutely meagre. So if we actually resource those sorts of initiatives properly, we could make a substantial step in that area of healthcare towards achieving the targets that Tom outlined.
I think Barb raises an important point. I don't know whether people are aware a recent comparison of approaches to Indigenous health between Australia, New Zealand and Canada by the Koori Health Unit in DHS in Victoria outlined about 4 key things. From memory, the Indigenous health workforce, as Barb has pointed out, Maori midwives improving outcomes in New Zealand, access to primary care. I can't remember the 4th one, but the 3rd glaring difference is the absence of a treaty, which is often raised by Indigenous elders and leaders in Australia as being a striking difference and one of the obstacles to achieving Indigenous health equality and self-determination. If we could get back to a couple of the things that Tom raised in terms of benchmarks and a health rights approach to Indigenous health, does anybody have any comments about those 2 issues specifically?
I'm Anne. I'm Anne McKenzie. I'm here for the Health Consumers Council of Western Australia, but I actually work at the Telethon Institute for Child Health Research, where we have a very large Aboriginal research network within the Institute, and I don't want to be speaking for them, but just last week I happened to hear a talk by the director of the Institute, Professor Fiona Stanley, and she talked about her great sadness that the research that had been done at the Institute, the West Australian Aboriginal Child Health Survey, which cuts across housing and education and health and all of those areas. And she talked about the fact that the federal government in their intervention in the Northern Territory, and they're trying to intervene in Western Australia, they hadn't used that evidence base. And I think that apparently she was overseas and said that when all of this took place, and she said that she had contacted John Howard to tell him to at least base his intervention on evidence. And, you know, she reminded him of that work that had been done. And that's perhaps something that we could take up from this summit, that, you know, at least use the data that's been collected with the community of West Australian Aboriginal families.
So. Thank you, Anne. I think it is a key issue, and something that ACRA should consider taking forward is stronger advocacy around the implementation of evidence-based policy, which we would probably all agree is sadly lacking.
Hi, I'm Russell McGowan. I'm from the Healthcare Consumers Association at the ACT. Getting back to your question of whether or not this staged approach to the realisation of equity for Aboriginal people is possible, I'd have to say I'm a bit pessimistic about doing that. If you think that you've got a uniform approach that you can apply in all of the different Aboriginal community situations, but you can turn it around and say we can tackle the distinct communities in a different way than we can tackle the problems that Aboriginal people living in fringe and urban areas are experiencing. And so therefore I don't know that setting 25% targets in 25% achievement of target in 5 years and 50% in 10, etc., is necessarily what's going to happen. Some of the solutions for the discrete communities are much. You need to put all of the infrastructure in place before you can realise the benefits to health. So I just think it's probably a little bit too broad brush, the overarching setting of those sorts of targets. I think you've got to look at how you deal with health problems in distinct Aboriginal communities, how you work with communities, empower communities, which was what Tom was talking about. And I think we can learn from those attempts to improve health outcomes for Indigenous Australians and apply some of those benefits in other rural and remote areas of Australia, not necessarily just to Indigenous people. And then we've got to look at ways of including Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are living in urban and urban fringe areas in our mainstream health systems as well, and making them more responsive. Anyway, that's just some responses to the questions that you put.
Thank you. So something to consider, how do we restructure the delivery of health services to make them more responsive to local communities? And that may not necessarily apply just to Indigenous communities, but they're an important case in point. Do we have any more comments in relation to that?
Gary Sauer Thompson from the Chiropractic Association. If you're going to follow Tom's path, strategic pathway, which is empowerment in local communities, then the key area would be to link your health into education, because in terms of long-term strategy, it's going to be Aboriginal health workers providing those services that are going to make it successful and achieve the targets. Yet there's very little about how we would address that educational issue.
Okay, one final comment.
Thanks, Fiona. Marcia Gleeson's my name. I'm from the Victorian branch of the Australian Nursing Federation. And look, I think I've nodded at nearly everything, or something that each person has said this morning. But the thing that strikes me is perhaps that we need to take the most basic definition of health that we can possibly think about. It's not about health services. It's about, as Tom, I think, said on that, it's about health services and infrastructure. So it's about education. It's also about life chances in terms of access to meaningful employment. It's almost as though the more basic things of Maslow's pyramid has to be addressed before we even can start talking about access to health services. And I think that that's compounded by the fact that we are here talking about other people's problems, so that the notion of empowerment and involvement and inclusion somehow has to be factored into this equation. And the final thing is the heterogeneity of Indigenous communities is something quite remarkable. We have got sort of like from the Imampas and the Matajulas that have been in the press recently, right through to urban Aboriginal communities who have overcome many, many of the challenges that the remote communities are yet to address. That's it. No question, Fiona.
Okay, thank you, Marcia. We'll move to morning tea now, but before we do, I would just urge you to all consider, as we progress the next 2 days of our summit, how we can progress our positions in terms of our advocacy of Indigenous issues to achieve Indigenous health equality. We've heard this morning from the audience about calls for empowerment, for evidence-based policy, for the consideration of the social and economic determinants of health, for improving links between health education, improving the cultural appropriateness of our health workforce. So as we discuss following our other presentations and in panel discussion this afternoon and tomorrow, we'll be looking for further concrete steps that we can take as an alliance to help realise some of those goals. So we'll stop now for morning tea, after which we'll hear from John Menadue. Morning tea's in here to the left. The toilets are out the door, past the fire extinguisher and to the left, and we'll meet back in here at 11:15. Thank you very much.